This is World Class Arizona. Thoughtful discussion about local issues featuring a panel of guests representing the business, cultural, academic, social, political, and thought leaders of our state. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com. World Class Arizona with Pat McMahon.
Pat McMahon with a very special edition of World Class Arizona, a special McMahon group. This is so special. I have a co-host, and the reason that Corbin Carson is here out of the news department is because of a really extraordinary piece of journalism. I congratulate you for that. The documentary that has been on KTAR about the subject of incarceration, the correction system in Arizona. What did you learn as a newsman and as a citizen of our state?
Well, it's a very complicated issue. I think that is the easiest way to explain it. After talking, we started this as continuing coverage back in November, and we've spoke to lawmakers, we talked to district attorneys, we talked to lawyers, we talked to former inmates, and the best way to describe it is it's extremely complicated.
Is it broken?
Oh, I don't think anyone's denying that. Everyone is pretty much in agreement that, reforms could help.
Well, let's find out from the McMahon Group on this special edition of World Class Arizona if they've come up with some solutions and how the broken parts might be able to come together. I'm going to have them introduce themselves because their credentials are so far the length of the entire program, and we won't be able to do anything about the incarceration and correction system if they just list everything that they've done. For example, if you will, sir, introduce yourself.
Hey, it's Grant Woods.
Again.
Grant Woods. I'm just a local lawyer trying to eke out a meager living for my family every day.
I believe this is the humble part of it.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
But for the folks who just
for
got
this,
here.
Well, I've been involved in the criminal justice system in every aspect. I've sat in every chair in the courtroom, with the exception of the defendant's chair. I've avoided that thus far. But I started as a public defender. I've been a criminal judge over hundreds and hundreds of cases, and I've certainly prosecuted a lot of cases. I was attorney general in Arizona from 1991 to 1999.
I would say that probably you're going to have to stop there because we have two other guests right. That have to introduce themselves.
Yes.
But we will be hearing from
okay.
you. Hello for the first time.
Hello.
I'm delighted to welcome you to KTAR.
Thank you.
And now the audience wants to know who I'm welcoming.
My name is Erin Nelson. I'm a forensic and clinical psychologist here in Arizona. I have a history of working in both state and federal correctional systems as a prison psychologist many moons ago. And I'm now in charge of the behavioral sciences curriculum for the University of Arizona College of Medicine here in Phoenix.
May I assume from that you have gathered many opinions on the correction system?
I have, and in fact, dating back to my time actually as a caseworker for the seriously mentally ill here in Maricopa County as well.
And you, sir, making a return visit. You used to come around all the time, but you're too busy for us now.
Hi, my name is James Hamm. I'm a former prisoner in the Arizona prison system. I was in prison from 1974 to 1992. My wife is executive director of Middle Ground Prison Reform, and I assume that's really why I'm here, because we are sort of a watchdog agency over the Arizona Department of Corrections, and we lobby at the legislature and try to provide them with genuine facts.
Do we need a watchdog in Arizona more than most other states?
I don't know about most other states, but we definitely need it in this one.
Why?
Because the system is not geared to do what it's supposed to do. It is essentially a huge bureaucratic institution that is run on rules and routines and that essentially produces a fairly high rate of recidivism, one of the highest rates of recidivism in the country.
Like right off the top, by the way, and getting this out of the way, you did how much time in the state prison?
18 years, just shy of 18 years.
And you were accused of and found guilty of?
I pled guilty to first-degree murder, drug-related homicide.
And why did you get out? Because it was something for life, wasn't it?
Yes, it was 25 years to life. I received a commutation of sentence in 1989, and then we had to litigate that issue. It was taken away illegally, and we litigated that issue until 1992.
When very quickly tell everybody how you spent your time in prison, as you spent a great deal of time as a student, as opposed to just simply a prisoner.
Yes, I graduated summa cum laude from Northern Arizona University with a degree in applied sociology with an extended major, and then I got a law degree at the ASU College of Law after I was released.
Corbin, you haven't met any of these people. I'm sure that you have a question for somebody.
Yeah, I could start, Mr. Woods, let's start there.
Sure.
You listen to the documentary,
yeah.
Obviously. One of the things that we found in there was that there was huge legislation that would be needed in order to do any type of real reforms. And one of the guests that was on said that it's not possible in his lifetime. It's not even likely. Do you think, first of all, do you think reform is needed? And do you think any reform is possible?
I think reform is needed. I think I'd like to start with at least with this position, which I don't really think was articulated well in your documentary, or necessarily by the comments you just heard, in that as far as what is the purpose of the prison and sending people to prison, the whole thrust was that it's for rehabilitation and that's it, and that's not it. There are a couple of other reasons why we send people to prison. One is for punishment. And whether they're rehabilitated or not, they are to be punished. They're to be separated from society, and they lose their freedom, and that's because of what they did. They need to be punished. Second is that for the safety of the community, they need to be removed from the community, period, regardless of what happens in prison. I happen to think that while they're in there, it would be nice if we would do things that would make them better people and better able to assimilate. But it's not just rehabilitation isn't the point necessarily, and generally it's not. Can we reform? I think you're going to have to go outside of the legislature, but we can do it in Arizona by initiative.
When we get back, by the way, after this break, I want to talk to Dr. Aaron Nelson about those comments, because after all, you've spent a great deal of time involved with the rehabilitation or the attempted rehabilitation of these people behind bars. That's what this program is about. And anything else that you gain from it might make this a better community. This is Pat McMahon with the McMahon Group.
The voice of Arizona, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and the KTAR app. Here's more World Class Arizona with Pat McMahon.
Let's lock up the people we're afraid of, not the people we're just mad at. What percentage of people in there truly pose a violent risk to the community? And I would argue it is very small.
That's Carolyn Isaacs, one of the people we spoke to in the documentary, and she was kind of just talking about her views on criminal justice, and I guess that leads into the next question.
Well, and that's Corbin Carson, my co-host, as we do this special edition of World Class Arizona with Grant Woods, Dr. Aaron Nelson, and James Hamm. And Dr. Nelson, right before the break, Grant Woods, as a former attorney general, as a guy who has prosecuted a number of people in court, gave you his views about the purposes that we are supposed to recognize in incarcerating people and what to expect when they get out. You talk now from your position as somebody who's been involved in that rehabilitation.
Well, I certainly think there is an excellent point in taking a first look at what is the purpose of incarceration. And there's no doubt that punishment and removal from society of dangerous people, protecting the public, is a large part of that. But when it comes to what happens next, as Corbin's guest mentioned, locking up the people we're mad at, there is that punitive piece. But we have people who are being released from prison. And if we don't work on trying to effectively and efficiently serve to rehabilitate people, then the door remains revolving, and the risk, the danger of people reoffending and also in potentially violent ways goes up. Even if we're mad at someone and feel like they need to be punished, it doesn't serve us, the public, the community well, if we are silent on what happens when they come back out.
Can I just say, I agree with the part about we might as well do things to, quote, rehabilitate or at least enhance prisoners' abilities while they're in incarcerated. I can give you I had a long history dealing with the Department of Corrections trying to do many of those things. They're quite resistant to almost all of them. But the I thought the woman in the documentary that we just heard from. I thought her comment was dumb and kind of ridiculous. And we're not sending people to prison because we're mad at them. Okay, if they need to be punished, that's a legitimate view. And as the doctor knows in the social sciences, there are many different reasons for incarceration. And you can emphasize whatever you want, but you can also have probably pretty much all of them. But we don't lock people up in prison because we're mad at them.
Do you think that we have, I probably should ask you this first, do you think we have too many people locked up, or do you think we have a mass incarceration problem?
No, I think we have too many people locked up. And I would look at mandatory sentencing in Arizona, which started out like most things do. It sounded like a decent idea. It was very limited. And unfortunately, politicians get involved, and they're the ones who pass the laws. And you can never go wrong, apparently, with the electorate in being too tough on crime. And so they added more mandatories, made it tougher. In the federal system now, we've backed away from that a little bit. And rather than it being mandatory, it's more advisory. We haven't done that in Arizona. And as you know, in the last segment, as I said, I think it's going to be difficult with this legislature to get anything like that accomplished. But that means we go to the people through initiative and say, hey, we got to do a better job here. This is way too expensive. It's not right. And we're really not solving problems.
James, of all of us here in the room, I'm going to make the assumption you're the only one who has done really serious time. So from the time that you were in for how many years?
17 years.
All right, 17 years. You got out what year?
1992.
Since 92, vast improvements, major changes, or hardly any at all?
Well, Middle Ground uses our mailbag as a barometer of what's going on in the Department of Corrections. We get something like 300 letters a month from various public and private prisons. The system has changed a lot. It has expanded significantly. Last year, I think 20,000 people were released from the Arizona Department of Corrections into our society, so to speak. About that number are going in every year, and so you can see that there's this massive turnover. I think that the reason we are sitting in this room today, all of us, is because there's handwriting on the wall, and we can see that the money, the big money from the federal government, is shifting into reintegration. And as a result, the Department of Corrections is moving in that direction, and all of us are here talking about what reforms can be done. But the bottom line is that people follow the money, and so we're going to see more and more people speaking as though they know what they're talking about when they set up these little community correction centers to help people reintegrate. The problem is that we are dealing with a situation that has been created by the very incarceration itself. I agree with Grant. Prison is for punishment. It's not just for punishment, but it's for punishment. There's no problem with that. The difficulty is that the way the Department of Corrections runs its own organization makes the matters worse. Not just in terms of recidivism, but also because the laws are in place and there are difficulties with trying to find employment. There are difficulties with trying to find a place to live. There are difficulties with trying to manage yourself if you are in a form of supervision. There are all kinds of difficulties that are associated with this, and by and large, the money isn't going to really touch those things. It's just going to create new buildings for the department to operate.
You were sent behind the walls of a major incarceration institution because you were accused and found guilty of murder in a busted drug deal. You got in there, you were not the best of our citizens at the time, and yet you studied law and came out with a degree, summa cum laude, from Northern Arizona University. What was the difference between you and any of those other people?
Well, obviously, I can't speak for anyone else. I tried to do something that I didn't see other people doing, and that was I tried to, first of all, I acknowledged that I needed to be there. I had killed someone. I needed to be in prison. The institution was there for me. The laws were in place, and I pled guilty. But what I tried to do was to look around me and to see, not just to criticize what was going on, because everybody was doing that, but to figure out how it could be better and in what way. And so I spent 17 and a half years thinking about that, and I have pondered it since my release in 1992. I have come up with, you know, what I think are some salient features of change, but I don't really see that this isn't the place to do them. I just tried to think about this the way that anybody would, because I was as shocked by my crime as anybody else.
Corbin Carson, please, go ahead.
Yeah, one of the questions I wanted to ask kind of both of you guys is, and we'll probably have to get to you, Aaron, after the break. But
Who are you pointing at? I'm not sure. I'm listening on the radio.
Right, to Aaron. But so one of the things I heard from the people I spoke to is, is it a matter of personal responsibility that was all the awesome things you did in changing your life around, or is it more of a societal thing that people need to address?
And Corbin, since you're asking both of the guys, Grant, handle that. You got a minute.
Well, I think it's all of the above, but we have to, if we're going to be serious about this recidivism problem, first we got to figure out if we're sending the right people to prison. And I don't think we are in many cases. Too many are going to prison, and many who don't need to be there. But once they're there, you're going to have a wide variety of people there. And you could start out teaching people how to read, dealing with their very serious drug and alcohol problems. They need the best treatment, not the worst or not scant treatment. Teaching them how to go to work 8 hours a day. Rather than watch TV or sit around or learn how to be a better criminal. There's lots of things we can do that would enhance their chances when they got out as far as what we could do for them on the inside. And we ought to do that, recognizing that they're not all going to be like James Hamm, who would, you know, do the amazing things that he did. So I think we have, as a society, the responsibility to put programs in place and procedures in place to make it work.
Our guest, Grant Woods, Dr. Aaron Nelson, James Hamm, on World Class Arizona.
The voice of Arizona. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and the KTAR app. Here's more World Class Arizona with Pat McMahon.
Quite bluntly, one of my guests, James Hamm, killed a guy a lot of years ago. And boy, has he changed his life. Boy, talk about turning it around. We'll find out also about the organization that he and his wife, Donna, have created in order to make a difference in the community and in the community that is behind bars. Dr. Aaron Nelson is here, and Dr. Nelson has spent quite a bit of time behind bars herself, but always on a voluntary basis and a professional basis to help those people. And Grant Woods, of course, former attorney general, practicing attorney in town, and Corbin Carson. And I hope you've heard the documentary that we've had on KTAR on this subject. This is a special edition as a result of the work that Corbin did. Listen, you got a special memory out of the documentary because you interviewed an awful lot of people. Give me something that you remember.
Totally from the there was a lot of people I talked to, obviously, and some of the central characters of the story were many of the felons who had spent various times locked up. Here's one.
Give people opportunity. I haven't lost the skill set I went in with. He hasn't lost his education, but these things happened, and the punishment never stops.
There it is.
It's like it's worship.
It gave me a chill the first time that I heard that. The punishment never stops. I can't even imagine being accused of a crime and being judged guilty of that crime, and then for the rest of my life, no matter how many years I might have had attached to my life as a sentence, no matter how many years thereafter, that the punishment would continue. Is that what you were left with, Corbin?
That is. It's one of the many things. In this context, they were talking about, you know, the many barriers, is their words, that I've heard, you know, between jobs, services. One of the other guests, who was a district attorney in San Francisco, mentioned that people are getting locked up, and then we're putting them back out into the same environment, and then we're surprised when they reoffend. That was kind of my take. But I'd love to hear Aaron's take on that.
Well, one of the things that stuck with me right away when I heard that comment from your guest was the sense of hopelessness and despair that many people have, and that I did see in patients that I treated that unfortunately returned. And I, you know, all of us who have worked in corrections at some point have some wonderful standout stories like Mr. Hamm to instill hope and inspiration. But unfortunately, all too often, we have people that are sent back out into a community or a system that is failing. And I really want to emphasize not just the offender or former offender, but the rest of us, when additional crimes are committed and additional money is spent in what seems to be a black hole. I think a lot, the pendulum does certainly swing, as we were discussing some on the break, the concept several decades ago of deinstitutionalization and sending people, especially mentally ill people, into the street, but then an absence of follow-up in that care that makes jails and prisons the de facto mental health system. And it's a tremendous bog on the system, and it adds to that sense of hopelessness, in my opinion.
But as a psychologist, what is the result of hopelessness?
When somebody, we want to look at specifically behavior and how people behave when they feel that they have nothing to lose or nothing to gain by engaging in pro-social behavior. And whether it's violent crime or it's survival, somebody engaging in crime, we also, in listening to Corbin's documentary, I recall hearing someone talk about the difference between trying to find a job, any job, a minimum wage job perhaps, versus the ease with which he could have resumed drug sales. And if you're starving or don't have a roof over your head, or your family or loved ones don't, that was something I talked with lots of people that I treated in the system about, that pull, that struggle, when they wanted to be a productive member of society, but the difficulties and the challenges that seemed insurmountable.
Grant, do you have any sympathy for them?
I have sympathy with a lot of them, not that guy. So I really thought that guy doesn't get it. I'm sure he will be back. Because his point was, he didn't even want to talk about a minimum wage job. He was used to making $56,000 a year, and that's the way it is. And
he's a different guy than the one that Aaron's talking about, but I know what you're talking about, because he does say, no, I don't want
it. No, I don't want
it. He's not willing
to
work.
Well, here's the problem. And you know, their life did change, okay? So here's how it changed. They committed a serious enough crime that they went to prison. And when they got out, it's just not erased. I understand this problem that it follows you the rest of your life, but that's because it's a fact. Just like other things, mistakes you make in your life, they do follow you. I don't think it's fair to an employer, this ban the box idea. I'm opposed to that. As an employer, I think I have a right to know that someone's has committed a felony and gone to prison before I hire them. I hope that in society, but this is a sociological thing that has to happen. That we would give people a second or third chance. But if some guy says, "Hey, you know what? I used to make a lot of money, and I'm not going to go work a minimum wage job. I'm just going to go back to crime," then I will say, then I'm going to put you behind bars, and I'm going to keep you behind bars because you're a menace to society.
Yeah, Corbin, he was referring to a specific part of the documentary that you did, and it has to do with the attitude of, this is who I was, and I'm not going to do this. Play that.
Are you willing to take the $8 job and show those skill sets that you said you both have, turn that into $8.50? $8.50 turns to $9, and if you're as good as you are,
you can take that $8 job and shove it up your
knew that was good.
I'm sorry.
Would you be willing, like, what would you say to someone that says, we'll work your way back from $8 to $68,000? needs.
I don't want your $8 hour job. I'm not even going to start there. I'm not even going to play around with you like that. I'm not even going to show up. I'm not even going to apply for it.
Not a lot of sympathy for somebody like that, Corbin.
Well, I think there's two ways you can look at that. And one of the reasons that was very powerful to me was I knew people would hear it, as Grant does, as in, well, then you deserve what you get. And then, but I also know people are, if you listen, he's frustrated. He's completely frustrated.
But he hasn't come to grips with what's happened. Right. And what's happened is he's committed a serious mistake that does affect his ability to be employed. That's the way it is. That's life. So if he's going to go back to crime, then it's only going to get worse for him.
Here's Dr. Nelson.
I for the record, first of all, the person, I had a similar visceral reaction to that comment as everybody, I think, else did. And the other guest was a different offender.
Right.
But I think that when I heard this person talking about refusing that job, of course, I had the same, well, you know, you lost the opportunity to have that sentiment when you committed whatever offense you did. But I also then thought about the public reaction and how simple it would be to take what Corbin very accurately described as a very complicated system and issue and to have that sort of inflame affect, the punitive piece of affect in response to somebody with that type of despicable attitude and how that would affect the broader discussion.
Right.
And
it's not punitive, though. I don't think the response to me would not be punitive there. Not that he doesn't need to be punished, but it would be a matter of public safety. If he's saying, I'm just going to go commit crimes then because I'm not going to work for a minimum wage, then we're going to have to stop him, or else he's going to be in your house burglarizing your house. It's just, or he's going to be selling drugs to your kids. So he can make a choice here. And if he's above the minimum wage job, then, you know, we'll see who wins.
Do you think of yourself as a hard nose, Grant?
No, I don't. I think of myself as fair. And fair means, you know, I've supported decriminalizing most drugs. I've supported drug courts, medical marijuana, completely revamping the juvenile code. I did all of those things. But, hey, you're not going to – you can be tough and fair.
30 seconds, James Hamm.
I think we should elevate this to what she was talking about, what the doctor was talking about with regard to the need for services when people are released. The fear I have is that the money coming into reintegration is going to be funneled into new buildings and employees for the Department of Corrections to supposedly help people reintegrate, and all we've really done is expand the empire without really addressing the problem.
When we get back, we're going to address the problem also with some solutions. And I want to talk about a program that I just read about in the paper that Taros has been doing. And I'd like to know what you think about it, because from the standpoint of the recidivism rate, it seems to be working for those folks. We hope we're working for you. On KTAR News, 92.3 FM.
The voice of Arizona. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and the KTAR app. Here's more World Class Arizona with Pat McMahon.
James Hamm is here. Dr. Aaron Nelson is here. Grant Woods on a special edition of World Class Arizona. That is the McMahon Group. This is such a big production that I needed a co-host, and we picked the guy who put together a really remarkable
very
documentary. And Grant Woods, you said you wanted to ask James something.
Oh, I just think James is right on that concern that if the federal government and others start getting heavily involved in the programmatic aspect of reentry, and that's supposed to be community-based. As the doctor said, I mean, I think we saw what happened in the homeless situation when the seriously mentally ill were supposed to be treated on a community-based basis. The money didn't follow, ultimately. So that's one risk we have. And the other is that we'd start something up and then not finish. The other risk is what James said, and that is it'll just be empire building. And the Department of Corrections in Arizona is very good at that, empire building. People don't like to say no to them. I think, you know, we could start by getting rid of private prisons. That would be a good start. And let the experts who really know what they're doing in community reentry and the programmatic aspects of it run those things rather than the Department of Corrections. I think they got plenty to do focusing on what happens behind bars.
I mentioned an organization called Terros, and just a few days ago in the Arizona Republic, Sherry Henson, the Vice President of Clinical Standards at Terros Health, wrote this on the editorial page of the Republic. About 2 years ago, Terros Health received a grant from the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Administration. And what has happened is the program seems to have been effective in reducing returns to prison on commission of a new crime, with a rate of recidivism for those who have completed the program at just 4%. And I'd like to have our guests in the studio respond to this. Prior to an inmate's release, an intervention team helps individuals change their lives by changing their thinking and actions, according to Sherry Henson. The service plan also includes teaching individuals how to conduct job interviews, find supportive housing, pay bills, and develop other habits of self-sufficient living. The program's helped more than 137 individuals re-enter the community, and the recidivism rate is 4%, dramatically different than the recidivism rate overall. Does this sound like a good idea to you, Doctor?
Well, certainly. That's a very positive editorial piece, and having not seen the study or understanding how they measured and what time span it covered, it absolutely makes sense from a conceptual standpoint that we need to give people the tools to succeed and the opportunity to succeed with practical daily living skills and experience and the opportunity to have some mastery and success, both while you are incarcerated and during the transition and subsequent. So while I echo the concerns about how that will actually play out and get managed in a big picture in the real world, that's certainly encouraging.
Corbin Carson.
Yeah, one of the big things that we wanted to do with this documentary was try to figure out what can we do. And I'd like to ask all of you that. One of the guests I had on the documentary was talking about the complicated issue that we're dealing with and the lack of political willpower to pull it off. Here's what he says.
It's not going to happen. The reality is, given the current legislative system, doing a complete overhaul of the criminal justice system, I don't believe that the time, energy, and cost of that will ever come to fruition.
And you're talking about Arizona, or you're talking about at all?
I'm talking about it all.
So my question to you is, you guys all, if you would, and maybe we could start with Mr. Hamm, is, one of the three big takeaways we got was recidivism, reform, and reentry. Of those, or pick any of you like, what can we do as a society now to try to help this problem?
James?
Well, I'd like to sort of come at it from just a little bit of an odd perspective, and that is that what we think of as reform, everybody starts shaking in their boots because they see it as turf battles and budget reductions and, lessening of their role or their position. But the fact of the matter is that this, even though this is a very large and very complex and very iconoclastic problem, tweaking individual pieces of this whole system is actually very easy. You could give judges a little more discretion with sentencing. You could change some of the mandatory nature of sentencing. You could tweak the probation department with regard to what people do on it. You could institute programs within the Department of Corrections that tend to, I don't want to be too harsh here, but tend to ameliorate some of the massive gang problem that we have. The Arizona Department of Corrections has more protective custody inmates than any other state in the nation, even though we're not the largest. There's a massive gang problem. There are lots of pieces to this puzzle that could be tweaked, but you have to have a group of people who are interested in doing it intelligently and who are also concerned about all the turf wars so that we're not getting people's hackles up and having them jump up in opposition.
Do you know if those people exist anywhere?
Well, I would include Grant Woods among them, but I don't know. I've never tried to go out and canvass the community. I've been involved in watchdogging.
Dr. Aaron, you have been involved with this subject all your professional life in some capacity or another. You must be aware of some state or some other country that is getting really solid results by making some kind of a difference.
Norway's one.
Well, we just saw a special on Norway. It really does look like the constantly mentioned country club. They don't have a serious recidivism problem.
Right. I think that we can look to models both in the U.S. and internationally, of course. Part of the problem, as both Mr. Woods and Mr. Hamm mentioned, is that this is an emotional subject that people respond passionately to, whether it's to protect their turf or whether it's the idea of being tough on crime. Generally, as a society, we have strong emotional responses to prison and prisoners and what to do about it. I'll defer to my base rates in answering this question and speak about the mental health component where I have the most expertise. And certainly, I think having better community-based resources, mental health programming on the front end as well as the back end would go a long way towards freeing up resources to be focused on just the type of programs that both the other guests are talking about and that Corbin made reference to. If we have case management systems, people in place to help support the indigent or low-income mentally ill with front-end life skills, job skills, living skills, ability to pay rent and function, then that can help slow the pipeline into the system in the first place, or certainly on the way out for some of those people, particularly that Mr. Woods mentioned, that don't need to be there. We aren't talking about violent criminals. We're talking about the mass incarceration of people who could function safely in the free world.
Grant Woods, when you were Attorney General of Arizona, you waved a magic wand and brought the tobacco industry to its knees. And an awful lot of people said that would have been impossible. Mm-hmm. And you and a number of other attorneys general, you got together and really had some clout.
Right.
Can you wave a magic wand right now over Arizona's correctional system and make a dramatic change?
Yeah, I think changes are possible. In the attorney general world, for example, Attorney General Sam Olin's in Georgia right now. Conservative Republican in Georgia is doing great things in the area of criminal justice reform, sentencing reform, things like that. You see the Koch brothers are saying that they're interested in this issue and are on the same side as those who want to reform. That's interesting. Those are different alliances. Senator Cory Booker from New Jersey has put together a great coalition in the Senate. I think that bill has a good chance of becoming law.
But what changes are they doing? What are they making?
Well, you're going to do a lot of sentencing reform. You're going to ultimately, I think, be aware across the country, as we have been in Arizona, frankly, that most of these people have drug or alcohol abuse problems. And if we could solve that problem, we would solve the crime that goes with it. In other words, they're committing crimes. They're breaking into your car and into your house because they have a drug problem. And if we could get them the best treatment and lick that drug problem, they would stop burglarizing neighborhoods. These are common sense things. These are not career criminals, but they will be career criminals if we don't use more common sense. And in Arizona, if the legislature and the governor won't do it, then the effort will happen, as it has before, where we will go to initiative and we'll let the people decide, and the people will decide that we want to be tough, we want to protect ourselves, but we want to be fair. We want to be fair to everybody, and that we still in this country believe in a second chance.
Hey, well, listen, I tell you, I don't know that we necessarily would have thought to do this special edition of World Class Arizona without the hard work that you put in, Corbin. And I say that not only as a colleague of yours, but as somebody who just appreciated the work. And I thank you for the documentary.
I appreciate you having me on.
And James Hamm and Dr. Aaron Nelson, Grant Woods. What we have all agreed, by the way, during one of the breaks, is that we'll all get together here on a weekly basis for several years. And at the end of that, even the most pessimistic of us says, wait a minute, we might be able to effect a change.
World Class Arizona with Pat McMahon. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.